This is episode number 8. When you are a caregiver, you know that every day you will touch a life, or a life will touch yours.
Welcome to the Innovateology podcast, where it is all about unleashing the creative side to find those brilliant, disruptive ideas to validate and build innovative solutions to solve life's problems.
Is your host Mary, and I'm joined on the podcast with your co-hosts Melissa and Linda. We're so glad to have you join us today and can't thank you enough for all the support our audience has given us on our first couple of episodes. Today we are doing the first of a two-part podcast around caregiving. In part one, we'll discuss the challenges of the beginning of life care and go into some of the pros and cons of daycare versus nanny. Then in our next episode, episode number 8, we'll discuss caring for elderly parents and go into some of the challenges that we face caring for our parents. So just kind of to set up, what we're going to talk about is kind of caring for a family member or a loved one is probably one of the toughest and most demanding jobs. And unfortunately, it kind of has it's financially limiting, where it's most of the time we're doing it for free, and we're sacrificing our day jobs to kind of do this around the clock. So every day, 40 million of our friends, neighbors, and relatives help their parents, grandparents, relatives, or neighbors with daily activities of living, including dressing, bathing, cooking, shopping, or even helping take medication. This is a financial impact, and it's sometimes unpaid labor that we see that we actually volunteer, and it actually estimates to about $470 billion per year, which is an amazing amount when you really think about it. Mm. So some of the questions that we hope to answer in this podcast is the need for care throughout life. And this starts, you know, from birth, daycare versus nanny, which is best for that new mom. And then all throughout life, going to that aging parent, the changes of care that we create with those aging parents, and then also that shift of burden that tends to happen. So just a little definition and a little background. We have a caregiver, and there's two kind of categories. There's that informal caregiver that we kind of touched upon, which is that unpaid individual, for example, a spouse, a partner, a family member, a friend or a neighbor that is involved in assisting others with their daily activities and daily living or medical tasks. And then there's those formal caregivers that are paid providers providing care in one's home or in a care setting such as a daycare, a residential facility, or a long-term care facility. And I'm sure in one part of your life you'll probably be an informal caregiver. I know I am as a mom right now, and I know Linda and Melissa will also share their experiences with their aging parents as that informal caregiver. So a couple quick statistics, since I think, you know, we all love to kind of hear what does that state look like right now, and what does that percentage look like for caregivers. So the relationships between caregivers and care recipients, a vast majority of caregivers, 85%, care for a relative or a loved one, and 42% care for a parent, 31% for a mother, and 11% for a father. Now, I find that an interesting statistic right there, because I thought that it would be caring for a child, but actually caring for a child is only 14%. So that kind of is interesting to me, because as a mom, I see other parents, but I think why that is because we have a lot more parents working full time. And there's a lot less of that burden is put on the mom for necessarily caring. What also is...
I wonder if it could be the baby boomer effect too, that there's just so many people in that age bracket to care for parents.
Exactly. Or maybe there's more grandparents kind of stepping in to kind of fill that void to help that mom out now. And what also is interesting is that 15% care for a friend, a neighbor, or a non-relative. So we're seeing some neighbors start to step in there, or a friend or somebody that we know come into that family unit. And then 7% care for a parent-in-law, and 7% care for a grandparent or a grandparent-in-law. So that's some of the interesting statistics right there in that care and that caregiver and caregiver relationships. So parent care continues to be that primary caregiving situation for midlife caregivers, with 70% of the caregivers being between the ages of 50 and 64. And most of the care recipients reside in their own home, and one in three, 35%, reside in the caregiver's home. Three out of 10 care recipients who are not in assisted living or skilled living facilities reside alone. And so that makes up 31%. So that's some interesting statistics right there, because here they're talking about living in their home a lot longer and going into those care facilities at that last stage. And so I'm sure Melissa and Linda can kind of share some more of their personal experiences right there of kind of what that looks like in their daily life of having to care for an aging parent. So what I also find interesting is the hours spent per week. So this is something that I have kind of come into as being a new parent, how much time I actually spend. And I think sometimes when we hear this work-life balance, we don't always go into the details of, well, let's break down the hours of how much do you actually spend taking care of someone else. It's more looking at how much do you work and how much do you sleep, how much time do you eat, how much time do you have time to go to the gym. But really, let's start to fit that caregiving into that equation. So here are the statistics, and this is an interesting one. Family caregivers spend an average of 24.4 hours a week providing care. So that's nearly one in four caregivers spend 41 hours or more providing care. So that's an interesting statistic. So right there, we're saying that average care is over a part-time job. So you can imagine the parents that are having to spend on top of their total jobs. That's about almost what? So we have 40 plus another 25. So that's a large amount that you're spending. Where are we able to sleep right there with all this caregiving that we're doing? So what's also another interesting is gender. So let's start throwing gender into this equation. So 65% of the care recipients are female with an average age of 69.4. The younger the care recipient, the more likely the recipient is to be male. Now that's an interesting statistic right there.
Yeah.
And 45% of the recipient ages 18 to 45 are male, while 33% of the recipients age 50 or higher are male. So these are some interesting statistics of, you know, where does the male versus the female come in there? And then gender and care tasks. So while males may be sharing in the caregiving tasks more than in the past, females still shoulder the major burden of care. So, for example, while some studies show relatively equal distribution of caregiving between males and females, female caregiving spend more time providing care than males do. And this equates to about 22 hours versus 17.5 hours per week. So that's interesting that there still is like a gap in hours for caregiving between male and female.
Yes.
So why don't we go ahead and jump into kind of the childcare, since that kind of happens first in life for all those new moms that are having to decide, you know, do I go back to work? Do I not go back to work? How much money is this really going to cost? So here's kind of some of the perceived burden that's happening right now with childcare. And so I found that this was interesting. So mothers find and experience child care burdensome at different stages of their life. So the younger mom actually feels more burden than the older mom, which I find is interesting there, because the younger mom feels more like she has to go out of work because maybe her salary is not necessarily high enough to justify paying for that daycare, versus the older mom who is having those children later in life can afford to have that daycare and still afford to have that full-time job. So this is kind of this interesting shift that's happening. And as we're seeing more and more older moms kind of waiting to happen to have their children, it's creating a difference in how we approach the perceived burden of childcare. Also, having relatives in the areahood also helps kind of help with this burden of childcare. So, for instance, in my situation, I actually am lucky to have at least one grandparent in the area to help take at least 2 days a week of childcare, which I totally am envious of the folks out there that have all sets of grandparents helping take care of the children, and there's zero financial cost. Those are the lucky few out there that I've heard about that, and I think it's very interesting. So, and also I've heard about other siblings kind of helping take care of, so it's more of a family affair to take care of a child. So the trends of moms, so we're seeing more and more women make more money, and also a higher percentage of those are becoming the higher earners in the family. We're also seeing less time off after childbirth. And what's interesting is that in 1971 to 1975, only 20% of the women stayed in the workforce after 6 months of childbirth. Versus today, we're seeing a lot more women take less time off during pregnancy and stay in the workforce after their children are born. But we're also seeing a trend of slowly transitioning out of the workforce into self-employment later in the child's life. And I think we're seeing more and more of this happen, where as the children age, we kind of only need the care at maybe after school. And so having someone at home to be able to do that, but also be able to have this work-life balance or this kind of dream career, but be able to mold it around the family, is also becoming more important. So this comes to the question of when that child is born, what does that nanny versus daycare look like? And what's best for your child? Choosing between hiring a nanny or enrolling in daycare doesn't have to be that stressful, but ultimately it does come down to a little bit of stress. I've experienced it. And sometimes the best approach is to kind of go through the pros and cons of each. So I'm hoping to take just a few minutes here just to go through some of the pros and cons and what's that best emotional and financial decision for your family. So should I hire a nanny? So what type of nanny should I hire? And I've gone through this as well too. And nannies can be live in or live out. And live in, of course, there's a little bit more risk where you really want to get to know that person before they come live into your house and eat your food and use your car or whatever facility you have or whatever amenities you have available. They can also be an au pair. And an au pair is part of a government program where it's for folks that are 26 and under coming to the States. And what I thought was interesting about au pair when I started researching it is the cost. So while you're only paying them slightly under minimum wage, you also have to pay for their insurance. You have to pay for a car. You have to pay for tuition. You have to pay for basically the room and board within your house. And so it actually equates to the same as a live-out nanny per year. And there's a lot of hidden fees with the agencies that sometimes you don't always see up front that you may be paying for. And you also have to pay for their plane ticket here. So there's a little bit of an interesting point that you don't always see up front. Also, nannies can come from an agency, or you can hire them directly through sites like care.com, Indeed, Sitter City. And that just depends on the area in which you live and how many nannies or babysitters are on those particular sites. The best site that I have found is actually care.com. So some of the pros of having a nanny, with a full-time nanny, parents don't have to wake up their children early, rush to get them dressed, make their breakfasts and lunches, and then have to deal with pickups, drop-offs from daycare. The nanny can also come into your home and kind of help take over those tasks that you might already have. So nannies can also cater to the children's needs and stay at home with your child if they get sick. And they can also help with cooking and cleaning, which is a big plus because you don't necessarily get that at daycare. Sometimes a home environment is warm and familiar, and you can childproof to whatever standard you want and set whatever schedule you want. And so this actually worked in my favor because my oldest was taking like 3-hour naps and still does take 3-hour naps, which is kind of nice in the afternoon. And at daycare, they were only allowing him a 1 hour nap. And this was when he was about 1 year old. So that's what some of the nice perks about that. And nannies also provide consistency and stability when it comes to childcare. So daycare, they usually have about a staff change at midday or just depending on the schedule. They have over 40 hours. So they have to divide it between about 2 to 3 caregivers, which is sometimes, you know, maybe your child latches onto one versus another. That's just something to consider. The cons of a nanny is that it can be expensive. And you also have to encourage the nannies to seek out social interactions for your children outside the home. And also, some don't use any curriculums or standardization when it comes to kind of teaching your child to get ready for that preschool. So also, if a nanny is sick or late arriving, you'll be impacted unless you have backup nannies in place. And lastly, nannies that don't pursue other careers nannies that do have careers can create turnover and stability. So like, for instance, if a nanny has been in one career for most of their life and says, hey, I want to try being a nanny, or I want to jump into this, or, you know, maybe they're graduating college and they want another career. You just have to look for those things ahead of time and really understand is a nanny their full career path. I'm sure we'll see that with aging parents as well too. You want to make sure that caregiver is truly in it for the long term. So let's just jump into daycare really quick. So daycare, there's two types of daycare. Sometimes you'll see standalone centers, and other ones you'll see in private homes. So both should be licensed and should provide the highest level of care and trust. So some of the areas where I tell parents before choosing their daycare is make sure you tour all the daycare centers that you are considering. I have been in some scary ones, and sometimes it's like, I can't believe the state licensed this one. Also, research a list of questions. Ask about teacher to child ratios, understand hours of operation, and beware of meal times, and understand how they handle allergies or dietary accommodations. Now, some daycares do not let you bring in your own food because they're worried that it might be made in a nut facility. Also, if they have a child that says that they're allergic to spinach, they have to treat that seriously. So you can't bring in spinach. The pros of daycare is that they often offer their own meals. So that means that you don't have to pack. They also provide social interaction. So you don't have to worry about introducing your children to new foods, people, or experiences that they might not have at home. Also, it ensures that your child is exposed to situations that can't really be replaced by a family or a one-to-one environment. And this could be learning experiences or socialization with other children. And it promotes essential skills such as sharing, taking turns, or being part of a greater community. Also, teachers and providers at daycares are often trained. And so they can sometimes get a little bit more than being a nanny. So a lot of times they can participate in age-appropriate activities. Daycares also have great start times and backup caregivers. So you don't ever have to worry about a nanny being sick or a nanny not showing up, which is a great perk. Some of the cons of daycare. So this is what I found out firsthand is that your kids get sick all the time. Literally, I had Ethan, my oldest, on antibiotics at least 5 rounds and ear infections nonstop for that first year that he was in daycare. And he actually gave us germs as well too, like some of the fun things that they don't tell you about in their daycare brochure, conveniently.
Sharing is caring.
Exactly. One of the ones that's the most scary one is hand, foot, mouth disease. Now, I had never ever really heard about this. It's a summertime. So, you know, believe it or not, there's bugs all year round. And I think we almost need to make a book about all the bugs all year round. And hand, foot, mouth disease is probably the most disgusting one. And it actually, I think you'll see it more on animals, but there is human strains. And what it is apparently I got the light version, but my husband unfortunately got the full on. Your hands get blistery, even under your fingernails. Your throat and your esophagus actually get the blisters as well, too. So you can't eat or drink. So imagine your child is kind of screaming as well. And you're trying to figure out, well, why can't you drink? And you usually love drinking your milk, but now you don't want to. And it also is on your feet. And parents can get this as well, too, if they have not been exposed. That was firsthand. Also, you can get anything that pretty much comes home, and it will go throughout your family. I can't believe how many germs there are there. Also, if your child does get sick, you have to pull them out of daycare and stay home with them. They have rules about fevers, and if your child does get a fever, you have to pretty much go pick them up and stay at home, and you're not going into work that day. Also, set daycare hours can also be problematic for parents with traditional jobs and schedules. So if you kind of have a night shift, you're going to have to find another daycare. Also, you know, if your child does get sick, sometimes you have to find a sick daycare. Daycare centers do have a high turnover rate, and they can be loud and sometimes overstimulating. And this kind of happened with nap time, is where it just is hard to take a nap. I can't even imagine trying to sleep in a place where other children are playing right next to the place where you're trying to sleep. So that's just some of the cons of daycare. So just to sum up my situation, what took me out of daycare and into a nanny situation was illness. Illness was number one. I think I was sick for a whole 3 months while I was in daycare, and it was hard to watch my little one be sick nonstop and get everything under the moon in that first year. And even when we did take a break, the first week he came back, he got hand, foot, mouth disease. The cost of daycare was great for one child, but when you have two, it actually became financially feasible to have that nanny come into your house and help with the added care of laundry, the added care of cooking, feeding two children. And so I could actually get out of the house at 8 a.m. instead of having to deal with more care. The turnover. So that was the only kind of negative side of having a nanny is the turnover. So that's like the biggest where I'm learning from, the biggest learning that I'm having. And some of the learnings that I'm finding from this turnover is asking that question of a previous nanny. Also, finding a nanny who will help with that's motivated in making play dates as well too. So what I find is that, you know, I think in New York City, you can see a lot of nanny networks where they know to kind of find other nannies at parks and kind of help create that situation of a friend. A lot of times I end up kind of having to coach them on how to make those play dates by going to the library. The local library is out of story time. And if there's other moms there saying, hey, can you reach out to them and see if you can set up a date if they're a similar age or you see some synergies there, kind of coaching them on that. Since there's no real motivation for them, you kind of have to find like an incentive of what's that incentive for them to, you know, set up a play date. So that's just kind of a wrap up of my situation. I know we have Linda and Melissa to kind of cover off on aging parents. So I know I've been talking a lot. I can't wait to turn it over. So in our next episode, we'll be speaking with Linda and Melissa on their perspective of caring for aging parents. Until next time, tell us your challenges as being a caregiver. Or have you developed a process that can help other listeners? Well, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thanks for listening to the Innovateology Podcast. We hope we have generated some disruptive ideas and helped unleash that creative side. Please help us keep innovating and leave us a comment or a review on our website. Till next time, don't stop innovating.